I say anything else, like our brother yesterday mentioned that he appreciated the prayers of the Lord's people. There's nothing in these days that trial that has comforted us more than to know of the prayers of God's dear people. You know, I often think people think that what a missionary needs the worst is money. He may need the money to carry on the Lord's work, but with all these companies now that they send to, you know, you send a gift into them, and that saves you writing a letter to the missionary. But really what comforts our hearts and we appreciate, going to get a few lines. Even our dear widow one time, she didn't say anything, but she says, "I've been praying for you for 19 years, and I haven't missed a day praying." And that was an encouragement to me. You know, because without him, we can do nothing. We are nothing. And we really appreciate when we know, and we do know, but sometimes it helps when somebody tells you we're praying for you. So you encourage the missionaries by just writing them a little note. Even if you didn't send them any money. Although one brother told me today, one time, he says, I was asking him how another brother was a servant of the Lord, and I was asking him how he was. Well, he says, "You send him $20 and you'll find all about how he is." So, but really that is not our point. We're happy to hear from believers and know the prayers for us, and you just keep that in your mind when you know that there's somebody out there. And don't think, well, I won't write because everybody else tells them all about us. But, you know, everybody thinks that, so nobody writes. So we don't hear from anybody. So you just don't listen to anybody or don't think anything. You just go ahead and write, and I'll tell you, it encourages our hearts. We need it, every bit of it. Now, I was asked to give a word on El Salvador. I hope you won't be disappointed. I'm supposed to give have a missionary meeting in Woodland, and this coming Saturday night there'll be lots of brethren there, and I hope to be, Lord willing, of course you don't know, we had hoped to go back to El Salvador this month, and the doctor feels we should wait a little bit longer. And so I don't know, but we're hoping that maybe this coming month or June that we'll be able to head back down there. And we hope to stop here in Forest Grove, Lord willing, and also in Salem, a couple of other places on our way down. So we'll be giving a report, and Arlington has asked me to give a report there. So, you know, you get kind of repeat yourself when you tell so much about the work, although there's much that we could say that's so different in every place, but they all want to know the whole story. Well, it's taken us 19 years to get that story built up, and I hope it won't take us 19 years to tell you this morning. But what I thought I would do, seeing as Brother yesterday, Tommy gave me a little bit of exercise speaking about going out in the Lord's work. You know, it's something real. It's not just a fantasy or an emotion. I mean, that's not what God wants. He wants somebody with a real exercise of heart that has the conviction that this is the way that the Lord wants you to go, and you go. It's not everybody that God calls to the foreign field or the home field. It's a calling. And when God does call, then I must say, you better go. Because if you don't go, you'll be in the wrong place. Someone has asked me, well, aren't you in danger down there? Well, we are. would be in danger at home. If I was here at home and God didn't want me here, I'd be in danger here. In fact, when I was coming up here, the brethren were all crying that I was coming up here to this country, this terrible country, the United States, where there's so much drugs and so much shooting going from the freeways to people using rifles and shooting people on the freeways, and they were afraid that I wouldn't get back to El Salvador if I came up here. So that's the other side of it. Of course, we have that right in El Salvador, too. When I'm in the city and I plan to go out east to visit the brethren, of course, the brethren in the city, you be careful. It's very dangerous out east, and they're very much in concern. And when I get east and want to come back in the city, you be careful when you go into the city because it's really dangerous there. And the stories that get around is really something. But when you really know the mind of the Lord about the way he would have you go, you don't have to fear what man will do unto you. We've had our scares. I won't say we haven't. We've had our times when our knees struck one towards another. Who doesn't have it in the Lord's work? But one thing I'll say, he has not failed us, nor forsaken us once. And this is something that we rejoice in every day. But I was just thinking, as I was meditating upon the word this morning, maybe there is somebody in the meeting this morning that is exercised before the Lord about souls. You know, if you're not, you better check out your foundation. There's something wrong if you don't want souls to get saved. Well, the night that I got saved, I was calling somebody up at 1 o'clock in the morning and telling them I got saved. The first one that answered the phone, he shut me down, and I knew that he was mad. The second one did the same thing, but I didn't give up. I called the third one, telling him I got saved. And something happened very strange. He says, I've been wanting to get saved myself. He says, how did it happen? And so I told him over the phone how it happened. He says, oh, I would like to be saved too. And he got saved 2 nights later. So it was a joy to me. That was the first little joy that the Lord gave me. And it was something, a desire, that I wanted to see others saved. And as I say, if you don't have that desire, if you don't want to do something for the Lord, the Apostle Paul, he was Saul then, but the first question he asked, he said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? He didn't say, Jesus, what wilt thou have me to do? He was acknowledging him as his Lord, and he wanted to do something for that Lord. Thou shalt confess with thy mouth that Jesus is Lord. It's one thing to take him as your Savior, but it's another thing to acknowledge him as your Lord. And you'll never be anything for God until that happens in your life, that he is Lord of all. I'm glad what one brother said here, if he is not Lord in all, he is not Lord at all. And I believe if that got a grip of us, is he Lord in your life? Is he to have the first place in your life, or is other things that you want more than to honor and serve the Lord in your life? I want to read two scriptures in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9. Verse 1. Don't worry, I'll tell you a little bit about El Salvador. I'm not going to let you out of here without giving you a little bit of mouth-watering for the word of the Lord in El Salvador. I won't disappoint that. I will tell you something of it, but this is on my heart, and so I'd like to get it off there before I go on with anything else. It says here, and he entered into a ship and passed over and came into his own city, And behold, they brought to him a man sick of the palsy, lying on a bed. And Jesus, seeing their faith, doesn't say his faith, but I believe it was his included. It was the faith of the five, not of the four. And he said, seeing their face, said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, be of good cheer. Thy son, thy sins be forgiven thee. Son, be of good cheer. Where did the Lord go? It says, he went into his own city. And that's what the Lord commanded his disciples, that they should begin at Jerusalem and then start out. And this is where you begin, right in the sphere where the Lord stages. This is where you can get the mind of the Lord, and where you find out what he would have you to do, is right where he finds you. Don't think of going out in the foreign field or any place else until you get that love for souls right in the assembly where you're at. And when you start the work amongst in the assembly and start to see souls saved, well, then the Lord will give you other work. But if you don't start there, then he won't lead you into other service. You have to begin at home. There is work to do here in El Salvador, in the States. Why, when I was going out to El Salvador, my boss, he says to me, he says, of course, he was trying very hard to keep him. In fact, I was telling a brother yesterday, he said, how much do we have to pay you to keep you here? I says, well, more than you've got. So he started going up, you know, and it sounded good, you know, the money going up, and he started to offer me wages way out of this world. But, and I said, keep going. And, so I just wanted to see how far he would go, you know. Well, I'll tell you, it was pretty enticing, but the Lord had already laid it on my heart to go to El Salvador, so I don't care if he would have offered me $1 billion, I wouldn't have stayed behind to accept it. Because when you get that calling from the Lord, there's nothing that's going to hold you back. And this is what I want to tell a little bit this morning, is a little bit of how the Lord led me into the work. And the other day at Fleetwood, I gave a report on the work, and I was going a little bit back, and my wife was getting after me when I was, she said, don't tell them all the back things. They don't want to hear all that. He said, tell them all the new things. You know something? I got outside, and a brother came up to me, and he says, but you didn't tell us how the Lord led you into the work, so I didn't go back far enough. So you sometimes don't know just what is the Lord would have you speak about. It seems like there's always a thirst to. And I trust this is a desire. Somebody knows, well, the brother was speaking about going out into the service. How do you go out into the service? How is it that God calls you? I think that's a good point. And I feel that sometimes we don't make it clear for others to know just how, just the same way as when you want to be saved. Somebody says, well, how do you get saved? Well, you sit down and listen with the Word of God, and you start to tell them God's way of salvation. And it's a joy, it's a thrill to tell others God's way of salvation. When a soul is really anxious to be saved, and we've had hundreds of them down there in El Salvador. We had one last night, and it rejoiced my heart. You know, I almost had more joy last night than I have in El Salvador. I don't say that I ever get used to pointing a soul to Christ. No, you don't get used to it. You can't. It's a thrill every time you do it. But there in El Salvador, so many are getting saved that, you know, sometimes you just take it for granted that they're, well, one's going to get saved. But in this country, it's a little bit different, I know. It's, in fact, I was into a meeting the other night. I was telling our brethren in down in California, and I sat there. I went in with Brother Tom Baker, and they didn't know we were coming. I like to just pop in, you know, and I just sat there, and I listened. And, you know, I looked around, and all these older people, I won't say old people, older people were just sitting there, you know, and they were listening, and I looked around, and, you know, I didn't see one soul that I recognized as an unsaved person in that meeting. And yet these brethren were, bless their little hearts, they were just going at it as if there was a hall full of unsaved there. I said, God bless them. I couldn't do it. I could do it. It would be beyond me to get up there, and it would be hypocrisy for me to get up there and preach it. I mean, I'd just get up and give them, tell them to get out and get some souls into that hall and to preach to. I mean, sometimes we say, bring them in. But you know, you have to go out and get them. The Lord told the disciples, you go out and cast your nets out there. They didn't say, well, tell the fish, come on. Here's a net for you to catch. He said, go out there and you catch them. And I think that's what we're losing today. We think that, well, they're just going to walk in that door automatically and they're going to come in. No, they're not going to do that. You're going to have to go out and get them. I'm thankful to the Lord in El Salvador that we really don't have to really, go around, as it were, convincing the people to come to the gospel meeting. I just go out there with the loudspeakers on my truck and just go around the town and say there's going to be a gospel meeting tonight. And thankfully the hall gets nicely filled and sometimes overflowing just by announcing that there's going to be a gospel meeting. Well, that doesn't happen in this land. I know it would thrill your heart just to go down there and just see that happen. But in this land, as I say, there's hardened sinners. And when a soul gets saved, I'll tell you, there's rejoicing. And not only with the angels in heaven, but with the Christians. Here we have the Lord, and he says he went to his own city. And there was there a palsied man. And the palsied man, he healed him. And he said, son, be of good cheer. Thy sins be forgiven thee. The man had two needs, physical and spiritual. But he called him here a son. Son. Now, he wasn't the Lord's son in the flesh, but he addressed him as a son. Son, be of good cheer. Thy sins be forgiven thee. Were we happy the day the Lord saved us? Did we hear him say, son, be of good cheer? Wasn't that a comfort to our hearts? Thy sins be forgiven thee. Never to be brought up again. They're once and for all, past, present, and future. Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. And we had peace in our hearts. Wasn't that some nice? You know, it's a sad day when we forget the day the Lord saved us and lose that joy of our salvation. It can happen. It can happen. It can happen in a church. I mean, in a local church, in an assembly, can lose that joy. Their first love. They can lose it. But thank God, it can be brought back again. We can be restored. And we trust that this conference in some measure will go back another way. Let's not go, well, I know you're going to take the number 405 or the number 5 back up to Vancouver, and so that's not what I mean. Let's go back another way. With new desires. Have a different, more of a love for the Lord, first of all. And if you have a love for the Lord, it's not long before you love the sinners the Lord loves. He had compassion on the multitude. He saw them as sheep that didn't have any shepherd. And his love went out for them, to them. He had a love and a compassion for precious souls. Have we got that today? Here the Lord said, son, be of good cheer. But I want to see another verse farther on in Matthew chapter 21. Verse 28. But what think ye? A certain man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, son, Go work today in my vineyard. He answered and said, I will not. But afterward he repented, and he went. And he came to the second and said, likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir, and went not. Son, you know, the Lord only calls sons. He doesn't call any unsaved to go up into his vineyard. He wants sons. And here is the commission, the command, go. Son, go. Go what? Sit in the hammock all day? No. I'll tell you, we have a hammock in our house. I think last year my wife says, I'm going to throw the hammock out. You never use it. It gets in the way. Well, it's there if I do need it. But I think I spent about 10 minutes the whole of last year, if I did spend that much, in the hammock. The Lord's work is a work. It's not a joyride. It's not a picnic. It's a work. The elders is not a position. It's a work. And when the elders of an assembly consider, well, just because I'm an elder, No, there's a work involved. And maybe that's the reason some of the assemblies are going down, because there's not that work, not that desire to work at it. God wants workers in the assembly. He wants them on the field. Go work. And related to that work, there's a price to pay. Yes? No, I don't mean leaving my job. That wasn't nothing. But down there, there's times that the Lord puts his hand upon you. And he tries you. He tries you. And these are necessary trials in order for you to be of any use for the Lord. I'm thankful today, you know, there up here in the States, you know, you get invited to a meal to somebody's home. You're thankful. And, you go and you know that you're gonna get a good piece of a steak or a pork chop. In fact, I was in Iowa one time and every place I go, I was getting steak. And I thought, boy, this is great, but this is funny. Here in Iowa, they have pigs. They don't have cows so much. They have pigs. Why am I getting so much steak? Steaks everywhere I go. I love steak. But I also like pork too. And, I just happened to mention to a sister one time, I can't understand that. Says, I get steaks, and no pork. Oh, do you like pork? Well, that was the wrong thing that I did, because I didn't get another steak. So, I've learned to shut my mouth from now on. But you know, down in El Salvador, and you get invited out, you don't know what you're gonna get. Lizards are good, by the way. I didn't think I'd like them, but I don't mind them. And I've learned one thing down there. Don't ask. Best not to ask, because you wouldn't be able to eat it. I've had rattlesnake. I'll tell you, I won't make your mouth water, but I'll other things, you don't know just what you're getting. In fact, when Tom Baker first went down there, I took him out to Playitas, and this couple had invited us out in this old shack. He was a fisherman, and invited us out to this shack, and we were sitting there, and the lady says, would you like to come for a meal tomorrow? And, Tom, he didn't know. He didn't like my cooking, but he didn't know if he was going to like anybody else's. But, after I said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll gladly come. And Tom says, what's you going to feed us? What's you going to feed us? I says, don't worry. I hope this isn't on tape, but, well, Tom won't know. Some that won't matter anyhow. He says, when's he going to feed us? So up in the ceiling, the thatched roof ceiling, there was a fish, a dried out fish, and they have this open hearth fires, you know, and the smoke had been going up, and there was big long cobwebs hanging down from it, and the smoke had just attached itself to the cobweb, and it was just hanging there. And I said, Tom, just look up in the ceiling. Just look up. You know, they tell you to look up. Well, look up. And he looked up and he says, oh. He says, are you serious? I said, why, sure. I said, it'll all taste good. I said, you'll enjoy it. I don't think he slept that night. But he says, I'm not feeling too good this morning. Oh, I says, I know why. I says, you don't want to go out to lunch, do you? Well, yeah, he says, but I think I maybe better stay home. No, I says, you're going. And so I got him to go, and of course I knew what was going to happen all the time. The thing is, I didn't let him know what was going to happen. I knew that we weren't going to get that fish because I had told him many days before, I don't like dried fish. I had already told him that, so I knew he would go out in the morning and he would get a nice fresh fish from the ocean and he would bring it home. And I knew all that, but of course I wasn't going to tell Tom. I just let him boil a bit and get all excited. So we walked in, and even before we got to the house, a nice smell of fish. I said, Tom, see, I told you it wasn't going to smell that bad. And I said, it'll even taste better. So he was still taking when we got in there. And we sat down, and she was the lady who was preparing the meal, and all of a sudden comes this beautiful fish, and he puts it right down before him. I said, Tom, do you think you could pray for that? Oh, yeah, I can pray for this. That's real good, and I think he really enjoyed it. In fact, he enjoyed it so much that night he was the first night that he got up to preach in Spanish. You know, I wish I have a tape on it. But I've never let anybody else listen. Tom promised me that I wouldn't. But I try and tape every first message of the missionaries as they come. We've had five of them come, and we've had five of them go. So I've had a fair amount of them to tape on the tapes. And but anyhow, this night, Tom, I said, would you like to have a little word? Oh, he says, I don't think I could. I said, well, give it a try. I said, they all want to hear you. So he got up there, and before he opened the scriptures, he says, you know, he said, me gusta mucho el pecado. Of course, he hadn't realized the difference between pescado and pecado. There isn't much difference. I mean, it doesn't sound much different, but there's a big difference. Because pescado is fish, and pecado is sin. And he said, I like very much the sin. And of course, the Salvadorians are very, very curious. They'll never crack a smile at you when you make it. Of course, I won't say that about me. I wasn't quite as curious because it kind of struck me kind of funny. And of course, Tom realized that something wasn't right. And he said, what did I say wrong? Of course, he said that in Spanish. They didn't know that. I said, tell them that again, but use the word pescado. And so he says, oh. So he told him once again the message of that he liked very much the fish that he had this afternoon. And that afternoon, and he was going to speak a little bit on what God has provided in his salvation, that is something that is good, is something that we will truly be thankful for and enjoy. So this is this man here says, I kind of get all waylaid. You'll forgive me if I get kind of distracted and while I'm going my line up out there. He says, son, go, work. The work may mean going into these places, getting accustomed to bad food, and going places, sickness all around you. But if you have his word, go, work. This day, doesn't say a year from now. When you hear that call, you gotta go. Wait till you hear it, though. Don't this day just say, well, I'm going. I mean, you, first of all, it might take a while for you to get that call, go this day and work in my vineyard. Go work in my vineyard. The Lord said the fields are white, already the harvest. Look on it. Look on it. And when you look at them, I'll tell you, you don't want to look at anything else. The world, it just kind of fades away. The things of this life that you have to leave, they don't mean the crack of a finger. Oh, if the crack of your finger, it doesn't, won't mean a thing to you. When you hear, go, this day, work in my vineyard. We trust that there's someone here this afternoon or this morning that will hear that call, go work today in my vineyard. I just want to tell you just a little bit about us, try not to be too long, how the Lord led us to all Calvary. As I said, right from the beginning of my Christian experience, I wanted to go serve the Lord. Of course, my heart was in Venezuela. That's where I was born in Canada. Surprised to some of you, I'm not a Venezuelan. I was born in Canada. And I'm thankful for that, you know. I was born in Canada. In fact, it came in handy one day down there when I was stopped by the terrorists coming in from San Miguel. And they pulled me into a side road. And I saw a few bodies on the ground. And I said, well, this is it. And I thought, well, it's not going to be much hope for me to get out of this. So I just lifted my heart to the Lord and I said, well, Lord, if this is it, well, thank the Lord for having led me here this long, and we trust that we have been of some use to the Lord. I mean, these thoughts kind of went through my mind, and they took me out of the car, and they looked through the car, and then they took me over to their chief. He was in a tent, and he said to me, he looked at me up and down, he says, can I see your passport? Well, I didn't have my passport, I just had my carnet, my Salvadorian carnet, and I handed it to him, and he looked at us, and he looked down, and most of them can't read. In fact, policemen stop you at some time, and you have to tell him, turn the book around, because he has it upside down, he can't read. That's the policeman. But this man, he knew how to read, he was an intelligent man, and he was looking right down that list. And he came to the word nationality, Canadian. He looked up at me and says, you Canadian? You born in Canada? I said, yeah. He says, we have nothing with the Canadians. They're good people. He says, you go on. I don't think it would have been quite as favorable as it was said American on there. It would have been just a little bit different story because that's what they're after. They've got a grudge against the Americans somehow or other, and they won't have anything to do with them. But he said, you can go your way. Well, I'll tell you, I made it back to that car in a split second, and I was on my way. I wasn't waiting for a second call on that one. I went, and I got in my car, and I cut down the road, and I thanked the Lord. Well, Lord, you still have some work for me to do. And again, a few months ago, coming up through Mexico, and we had the accident, as you know, and everybody looking, in fact, you'll be seeing the pictures that they took of the car, and everybody says, how did you get out of that alive? I don't know. But once again, I had to say, well, Lord, you must have something else for me to do yet. And I'm thankful to be here this afternoon, and still with a desire to return to El Salvador. We're not worthy of such a work. And all glory to Him for what He has done. But upon our heart, and we've got to go back, we can't do anything else. And as we go back, we trust that the Lord will give us even more love for precious souls than we have. But the little land of El Salvador was never in my mind. I didn't even know that there was such a place as El Salvador. Venezuela was before me. I wanted to go there. But I never got the green light. Well, in the first place, my wife, when she married me, she says, there's two people I won't marry. She says, I won't marry a salesman, and I won't marry a preacher. Because both of them mean that they were going to be away from home, and she didn't want to be married to somebody that she was just going to be a widow at home. And so she said she would never marry a salesman nor a preacher. So I never really, I just left it before the Lord, what the Lord would have me do, and just kept praying about it. And there were circumstances in my life that I began to get involved. I had a service station. In fact, so much was I involved in that that I began to miss the morning meeting. So one brother came to me, and this is why I mean work of the overseer. He came in his car, and he said, Jack, he said, I want to speak to you a little minute. I knew what he wanted to tell me. I thought he was, I mean, and if he'd given me a good bawling out, I deserved it, because I had missed four Sundays. And I had my own business. You know, if you're working for somebody else, it's different. But when you have your own business and you miss a meeting, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. You have to have it out with the Lord. If you have the privilege of having your own business and you miss a meeting where the Lord's people, guided by the Lord, are gathered together to hear His word or to pray or to worship, that's where you should be. And I knew that was I should be. So when he came, I thought, well, here it is. And I deserve it. I was ready for it. And we got in his car. I sat in his car. And I was facing the wall. Just, there's nothing to look at. Facing the wall. And I sat there in the front seat. And he sat there in the front seat. Neither of us said a word. Just looking at this blank wall. I had lots to think about, and he let me think about it. And he just let me sit, and sit, and sit. He must have sat there for half an hour. Not a word for me. At least it seemed a half an hour. Sometimes it might not have been that long, but it seemed forever that we were sitting there. Just like when my dad would give me a licking, it seemed forever that he would never quit. It was this brother, and he sat there, and he just stared at the wall, and I stared, and he shut his eyes. Pretty soon, I looked over at him, and I saw a couple of tears running down his cheek. Pretty soon, there was a couple of tears running down my cheek. I had to wipe them off. And he looked over at me and he said, Jack, we've missed you. We've missed you. You know something? He left. And I called up the Standard Oil Company. I said, I want to turn my keys in. Why? Because this thing is ruining me. Oh, we'll help you. We'll give you some money. No, I said, it's not that. I was doing all right. I was selling. Wasn't making much money. You don't make much money when you start off in the service station. I think I was making $1 an hour. And the people I had working for were making $4 an hour. And in fact, I was jealous of them. But I was losing out. I was losing out. So they had a representative come and he says, Jack, he says, what's this phone call? I says, here's the key. He says, I'm through. No, no, no. He says, what's wrong? I says, I'm through. I says, I don't want this anymore. No, he says, you can't do that. He says, tell me what's wrong. Well, I got the opportunity. I says, well, I'm a Christian. He says, I knew you were. He says, the way you do business, I know you are a Christian. And he says, but what's wrong? I says, well, I don't want to be open 24 hours a day. I want to be closed on Sunday. And he says, oh, well, you have reason to think, well, I know that my the top brass won't go for that. They won't go for closing on Sunday. I said, well, here's the key. Just tell them. So he went his way, and he came back in a couple of days. He says, Jack, he says, we have an offer. He says, the top brass, the president and the committee, they're going to let you close till 12 o'clock or 2 o'clock on Sunday so that you can get to your meeting. I said, no, I don't want that. You know, the devil's always ready with compromises, you know. He wants to compromise. You do this and this. And I says, no, I says, I want to be closed on Sunday. Oh, no, he says, we can't do that. I said, that's fine. I said, well, again, I put the keys. I said, here they are. And so he went again. I said, well, I'll see what they say. So they came back. They waited 3 months. I thought, I was going without a lease. I didn't even have a lease, and I was working there. And I thought, well, I wasn't going to call them up. I said, I was closing on Sunday. I did it myself. I closed the door on Sunday. I told everybody, not coming. And I was getting out to the, I had Brother Blair here with me. He wasn't there at the time, but, I was in Fairview, and, he would know the person who came to visit me, but he sat down, he came back after 3 months, and he said, Jack, here's the lease. He says, will you sign it? I said, sure. But I got to read it first. It's good to read, you know. Those small prints can sometimes fool you. And so I began reading, and lo and behold, it said a phrase. You can lease this for 3 years, and you can be closed all day Sunday. I said, what happened? How is this? Well, he says, I don't know. He said, but the boss told me, he says, you could be closed Sunday. I said, well, I'm going to call the boss. He says, what's up? There must be a reason. So the boss came down to Standard Oil, because I was just up the road from where I had the station. He came up, and I said to him, I said, why am I allowed to close Sundays? He says, listen. He says, we've surveyed this service station, or we've kept our eyes on this service station for 3 months, the sales, and how you're doing. He says, and we've discovered that you sold more on 6 days than when you were open 7 days. So he says, we're just letting you go ahead and close the seventh day. So that's what you want. Because after all, what we're interested in selling gas, we don't care how much when you sell it. He says, but if you can sell just as much in 6 days as you do in seven, well, you just go ahead and close. Well, that was the beginning of the Lord dealing with me, that he wanted me out of there. Still, there was a lot. I couldn't do what I wanted for the Lord. I was very busy. Of course, working 24 hours a day, it was rough. And so the Lord guided us that we could go down to the States and just apply for a job. I couldn't even get a journeyman. I was a mechanic in Canada, but they wouldn't accept me as a journeyman, so I started off as an apprentice. And it's kind of hard when you have two children to start off as an apprentice, but we just felt that that's what the Lord had wanted us to do. He opened up the way, and we started to work as an apprentice. It's hard going, but I had more liberty to speak for the Lord, to go to all the meetings. I just was in the joy of it. And so, little by little, the Lord started to work. Well, little by little, too, the devil started to lift me up in the job. And I got journeyman, and then I went up to service salesman, and then they offered me the service manager's job, and in a shop that there was over 100 mechanics, and I said, no way. For one thing, I made more than a service salesman than a service, well, that was one. My wife got kind of mad when I took the job of service salesman, because remember, it's two persons she didn't want to marry. She didn't want to marry a salesman. And that was one point kind of against me, but she got over it when I proved that I could get home on time and that I would be home on the at night, and she let me off with it. And that started going up and up. And one day, the thought came to me. I had heard that Dud Reed was exercised about the work in El Salvador. And it just struck me, I wonder why he's never gone. I wonder what's holding him back. So at the at a conference in Vancouver, I talked to him. I said, Doug, I says, I'd be willing to take off 3 months off work and accompany you down to El Salvador. I says, if that's what you need. He says, that's just it. He says, that's what I've been waiting for. Somebody to go down with me. He says, not that I'm afraid, but he's got the verse, thou shalt not go forth to strive alone. Of course, I told him, listen, this is only for 3 months. I said, I'm going down just to help you get started and get you, because he didn't know even how to get into the country, the papers and everything. It was a difficult job to get the papers, so he wanted to go down there. He couldn't figure out how to get into the country. So lo and behold, it was one point after another, the Lord opened up the way. A brother provided a camper. I bought a truck, and the Lord provided a camper. Mind you, it was a problem because when he got back, he says, oh, no, did I do that? Well, he had built the camper, and in the little men's room in the camper, he hadn't put a vent on it, and of course, everything that all smells and everything went right into the camper. He was really disgusted that he had built a camper, but that didn't bother us. We had the doors and everything open down there in El Salvador, and we enjoyed our time together. In fact, one time we were together in a place, and Doug says to me, he says, we never really knew each other. He says, we're down here like if we'd known each other all our lives. In fact, he locked me into, we were down in the washrooms, and we were in separate washrooms, and he was in one and I was in the other, and he says, well, I'll see you up at the camper, and I says, okay, I'll be right up there. And we were talking back and forth how the Lord had led us and how we were getting along to still get together, but when I went to get out, I couldn't get out. He had locked me inside, and I had to crawl through his face about that far on the floor on my stomach to get out of there. And I said, well, that's how good we get along. Of course, that was Brother Doug's way of letting me know that he really appreciated me. He appreciated our work. But during the 3 months that the Lord had us down there in El Salvador, there were several things happened. One of the important things that happened was we saw a few souls saved. You know, we got a taste of that. The Lord gave us a taste of that. In fact, one place that we went into to preach the gospel, they'd never heard the gospel before in there. And we were invited by the relative of another man that had got saved outside there, and he and his unsaved brother invited us to have meetings. Well, we started meetings there, and the priest got word of it that we were having meetings, and he was going to do away with us. He had every intention to do away with us. And one night, Doug and I were having meetings, and it was a place, the bugs were terrible. And, we had a little kerosene lamp that it was, we had it lit, and there was bugs, and you could hardly see the lamp for bugs. And you wouldn't open your mouth very big, you know, and the Lord said open my mouth wide, but we learned, you know, just to open it far enough so that these bugs would get in, is that they once get into your throat, they were just stung you like chili down inside. And we were preaching away, and all of a sudden Doug says, I'm going to kill all these bugs. And he started swatting. You know, there was a bunch of people standing there. In fact, we were preaching to the children. There wasn't people, children. And all the children just ran out. And Doug couldn't figure out. I mean, he was just going to kill the bugs. He wasn't going to kill the children. But that's what they took out of it, because the word that he used, well, it's their word for kids, I'm going to kill all the kids. And the word he used was going to kill the bugs. And so they all made headway. So then they found out, when he found out what had happened, of course, he called them and pulled them to all to come back. But we were sitting, we were in this meeting, and All of a sudden we heard a hustle coming up the lane, the dirt lane. And we didn't know what was. There was chanting and there was shouting, and we were a little afraid what was going to happen, because there was just that in the air, there was a feeling that there was something wrong. And so this group of people started to come up the road, and there was somewhere over here in a little place close to San Vicente. And when they got up, they stopped right. There was a wire fence. I'm glad for that wire fence. They stopped right. And they all were shouting, and they were telling us to get out of there. And they had every thought of killing us, sitting up on a stone wall on the other side of the lane. And these men were all getting ready to bounce on us. And all of a sudden, just as quickly as they came, they turned around and walked away. We kept on preaching, finished the meeting. And after we said, well, what was that all that commotion about? Well, they were here to kill you. I said, well, why didn't they do it? Because the Lord still had some work for us to do, I guess. And he says, you know what? He says, up on that wall, there was five men, and they were armed to the hilt with guns. And they told the leaders of that gang, that if you put one hand on those fellas, because they had been there listening, and they were really impressed with the gospel message, if you put one hand on those fellas, we'll open fire on you all. And so that was the way they decided it was best to leave things alone and just head back down away. But it was in that place we saw several nice souls brought out from the darkness, the superstition of Catholicism, and they were gloriously saved. And then in the city also there was some that professed. So there was that joy of seeing some souls saved. But there was a hindrance in my part. I mean, Doug says, well, as I say, I was just going to stay for 3 months. He says, why don't you come back down with me and labor here? I says, well, I says, really, it would be nice, I says, but I really want to know that it's the Lord's will that I come. And he says, we'll pray about it. So I think we prayed about it he prayed more about it than I did. Every meal that we sat down to, Lee Jack, and he was praying for me. So there was one thing in my mind. I said, Lord, this was before I went, a couple of years before that, I always had this feeling when we had our 2 children, Lord, I really want to go out and serve you, but I would like you to save my 2 children first. Now, I don't say that a servant of the Lord has to have his children saved before he goes out to serve. That was just my own conviction. I wanted to see them saved because I wanted to get the work at home done first before I started on somebody else. And I started to ask the Lord, I wanted those children saved. Well, I hadn't gone out to the work of the Lord in full time. I mean, I'd gone there just to accompany Doug. But while I was down there, there was a couple of brethren in Arlington having meetings. And my wife wrote and told me that Craig and Don were both concerned. So I started praying. I didn't tell her why. Of course, I mean, there was a reason, because we want our children saved, but there was other reasons too. I started praying, Lord, save them. You know, one day I got in the mail a letter from Craig. You know, there's nothing brings more joy to a father's heart than to say, Dad, I got saved tonight. I just sat there, I was with Doug at the post office, he says, what happened? He thought I was crying. I wasn't crying for sorrow. I was crying for joy. He says, what happened? I says, Craig got saved. He says, there, the Lord hit you again. He wants you down here. I didn't tell him about Greta when about 3 days later I got a second letter. And it was Dawn writing me. She said, "Dad, I got saved tonight. Brother, there's nothing that gave me more joy there. It was a real answer to prayer, not only to see my children saved, but the Lord working out that He wanted me to go work for Him in His vineyard." Well, the next question was, I wonder if Ellen will come. Dad isn't here today, but she probably listened to her on the tape. She knows her. But she says, "I wonder if she would come." And I began to pray about it, that He would touch her heart. One day I got the courage up to write her a letter to ask if she would come to El Salvador. I wrote, and I think I tore off 4 letters before I finally got one that I was, you know, I went to put it in. "No, I can't do it. You know, I because remember, she wouldn't marry a salesman, she wouldn't marry a preacher." So I thought, well, this is it. But one day I remember putting that in the box down there in San Salvador. If I could have taken that letter out, I think I would have. But it was in there. And I just left it in the Lord's hand. Well, I'll tell you, it took about a week to go, and a week to come back, mail an answer. And those were the 2 longest weeks in my life, I think, waiting for that answer to come. But it came. Every letter I got, when I was getting near, you know, to the time, I would go right to the bottom, not just because to read, you know, the nice, sweet words at the bottom, but usually at the end of the letter tells you more what they have in mind. You know, they usually go through other procedures first before they... So I always went to the bottom of the letter first to see if the answer was there. And every time it was a disappointment, not a disappointment because I love those nice words, but this one letter came one day, and I just said to myself, "I wonder if this is it." And I opened it. Brethren, once again, the Lord touched my heart. You know what that letter said? It just said these words. Get it on the top of the letter. "Where thou livest, I will live. Where thou diest, I will die. And there will I be buried." It was a real thing to me. And Doug looked at me. Of course, he had looked at me when I was crying, when I got the letter from Don. He says, "How hard does the Lord have to hit you?" And so when I got this letter, it was, I guess, just a flood of tears that come out. And he says, "Man," he says, "if you don't go," he says, "you're in trouble." He says, "You're in trouble." So I began then thinking of it in a more serious matter before the Lord. I wanted to be sure that this is the Lord. You know, the Lord doesn't just work by circumstances. Circumstances the devil can do. I wanted His word. I really wanted to know what His word, because when the going goes rough, I don't go back to circumstances. I go to the word. What did He tell me? And it's the same thing with salvation. When you get your doubts sometimes, I don't know if you have doubted. I never have doubted, but some have. If you ever get your doubts, what do you have to do? You have to go back over the ground. And what is it that brings you the joy and the peace in your heart? It's not, well, the emotion that you had. That's not what you remember. What did the Lord tell me? And that is what I had to get before the Lord before I would be happy. Oh, God, I won't go into it. He gave me a number of scriptures. But there was no doubt in my mind from His word that this is the way that He would have me go. And He told me in Isaiah, "This is the way, walk ye in it." It's one of the verses. And it was so real that I said to Doug, I says, well, I says, let's find out what it takes to come into this country. I won't go into the other details of what we did, because we built a hall while we were there. It was wonderful to see how the Lord led in the building of that hall. Neither of us had any money. And in fact, the assembly that sent us the money to build that hall, they didn't even know that there was a need. And they sent me a gift of fellowship. I wasn't even in the work. And they sent me a gift of fellowship. You know, some people ask me if Craig's in the work and you know if they can send him any fellowship. Well, I'll tell you, if you're doing the work of the Lord, even if you don't have a letter, it should be that exercise to have fellowship with someone who is dedicating their time to the Lord. Craig is exercised, and I trust I'm not going to push him. I think the time will come when the Lord will make it clear to him. But in the meantime, he just wants to serve the Lord there. And I don't think the Lord will hold it against you if you do have a little fellowship with him. I'm not putting a plug in for him, but I know it will encourage his heart. But this was my... I wanted to be sure that it's the Lord's will was in it. And I said, if this was the Lord's will, I know that he will lead me here again. So we both started, Doug and I started to pray, to preach at the same time, preach and pray and fuzz away. That's just what this is. But I thought, well, the Lord has saved my children. He's touched my wife's heart. She is willing to come. There's one more point, and it's a hard one, I thought. I'm going to have to meet up with the brethren. What will the brethren say when I tell them I want to go back to El Salvador? And so that was hard. That was hard. And I worried it all the way, all the 4,000 miles back to El Salvador, to Arlington. What were the brethren going to say? Not that you have to fear the brethren. I loved the brethren, every one of them. They were a great man of God, and I appreciated their desire to help the young believers and to be an encouragement to them. But I remember the Thursday night, that was when they had a prayer meeting on Tuesday night and a Bible reading on Wednesday night, Thursday night, and my father one time got up. He didn't know that Arlington had changed and changed it to an hour and a half just on Wednesday night. And he got up and preached, and he says, you know, there's some assemblies that can't pray and can't sing anymore blessed hour of prayer. It's only blessed half hour of prayer. Of course, he didn't know that Arlington had gone that way. It was, I'm not throwing sticks. I know that they do it for a purpose, but it was on a Thursday night. We arrived on a Wednesday, and we went on a Thursday, and I made up my mind, well, I got to meet with the brethren. And I was nervous during that meeting. I was sitting in the meeting and knowing that I was going to have a chat. And as I was walking out, that's the first time I'd seen them, and I was walking out the door, Garrett's horse was standing, and he was coming up, and I said, well, I'm going to tell him. And I got a hold of his hand, and I said, Brother Garrett, I said, no, this is what happened. I took out his hand, and I said, good evening. He said, Garrett says to me, why are you going back? That was the first one. Before I even said, well, I'd like to have a, you know, tell you my exercise. When are you going back? And so I said, well, that's just what I'd like to ask you. I said, when could we meet with the brethren? He said, what do you mean meet with the brethren? He says, we've been praying that the Lord may lead you back there to El Salvador. He says, we don't have to have any meeting. He says, that's where the Lord wants you. He says, you'd be a fool if you didn't go down there. I don't know if he used the word coolly, but he was very careful what he used, but that was the idea that he gave me. And you know, that was a voice to me. Well, there it was. The big step going down. Well, the next step, of course, wasn't hard to do. I told my boss, I was walking down the walkway one day, and I was going up the other way, and he stopped me. He says, Jack, what's wrong? He could see it on my face. Well, the time's almost went up. He saw it on my face. He says, what are you doing? He says, what's the matter? He says, so I thought I'd better tell him. I says, Listen, Matt, there's something I tell you. He says, I plan to go back to El Salvador. He says, that's what I thought. He was an unsaved man. So that's when the boss took me up. He led me up to the boss's room of the company, the president. I'd never been in that room before. It was quite a thing. You go into a carpet about there, you got a sauna and everything. And it was a beautiful, beautiful, a real apartment in there. Never been in there before. Here I go, sit down in this chair, and he starts to, of course, persuade me that I should stay, and he started off, and the prices went up and up and up. And he says, after he got down, he says, listen, he says, I want to know right now. He says, how much are they going to pay you? I looked him straight in the eye. I says, sir, Mr. Lyon, I says, they're not going to pay me a cent. I says, I don't have a guarantee of 1 cent. He looked at me with a blank look on his face. I still see it to this day. He looked at me, he says, Jack, he says, you're a fool. I says, thanks. I says, that's exactly what the Bible says. You're a fool for Christ's sake. I says, that's just what I wanted. I says, I'm going. He says, well, he says, I'll tell you one thing. He says, if you decide to go, he says, if you come back, he says, even 5 years from now, he says, if you come back, you'll have your job. I said, I don't think I'll need it. But I said, that's fine. He says, if it doesn't work out, he says, I'll give you back your job. Well, I went out of there. We were down in El Salvador 5 years, and 6 years before we got back on furlough. And I walked in. I still remember this to this day. I walked into it. I was nervous. I'm nervous enough to just go right up and knock on his door. And he opens up the door and he says, big smile on his face. He says, I told you you'd be back. And he was happy to see me. I says, Mr. Lyon, I says, I'm not coming back for my job. I'm going back to El Salvador. He says, you're a bigger fool than I thought you were. I says, thanks again. And so I walked out. And Devin, I've never been happier. I was happy there. In fact, the boss says, he says, aren't you happy here? Yeah, I was happy. Because that's where, for the time, that's where the Lord wanted me to be. But I'll never be happy. I'd never be happy anyplace else. The Lord should lead us out of El Salvador, should shut the door. Well, the Lord will have other purposes for me. I don't know what he will have, but well, he has us there. It hasn't been easy. There's problems, very difficult problems these last 7 years. Not only the problems of the country, but I'll tell you, having five workers leave you, seeing five workers come, and seeing five workers go, I don't hold it against them. I don't. I haven't any hard feelings against any of them. And the Lord only knows why I'm still there. But I'll tell you something. The Lord has given us grace, courage to stay on, and to just see the work continuing, to grow. There's 11 assemblies now in El Salvador. Wasn't any when I went there. 11 assemblies now. Most of them are growing. The Lord is lifting up gifts in those assemblies. There's nice gifts in the assembly of San Salvador and Santa Lucia. New assembly there. Nice assembly. There's gifts. In fact, at the conference, Craig was telling me they had a conference at Easter time, and there was four brethren that took part very acceptably. Al Fled is down there right now to give Craig a little bit of moral support, and I remember him in prayer. They had Craig is there holding the fort, and he's doing a good job. He's working. He has every night he has a meeting somewhere. He's got 9 children's meetings, I think he's got. Some nights he has 2 children's meetings a night, and besides the other meetings that he goes to, the minister meetings and so on, to be a help. that there's no end of need there. There's souls that are crying to God, for God's salvation. But where are the workers? I was touched by Brother Tommy's message. Where are the workers? We need to be exercised before that, brethren. Pray. I'm not saying that I'm going to just get a hold of you and say, you're coming down with me. I can't do that. But we need to all pray. Lord, here am I. Send me. It's easy to send another one, you know. Lord, send someone. But have you ever prayed to the Lord, Lord, send me? Send me? It's not easy. You better not say it if you don't mean it. Because the Lord will take you up on it. Don't make any promises to the Lord either unless you're really willing to go through with it. Because he'll take you up on it. But I'll tell you one thing. If you hear him say, yes, you go. Work in my vineyard. You won't have anything to fear. The Bible says that you'll have your hills and your valleys. You have them down there. Sometimes there's more valleys than hills in the Lord's work. But it's a happy work. And I never regret the day that I went down to serve the Lord. And we ask you, dear brethren, as I say, I haven't been given much of the details of the work, but we hope to be back here. And now I have to come. I have no alternative to come back and tell you a little bit of the work, seeing I let you down and not telling you other work in El Salvador. But I would like you to pray. There's a lot of need right now. There's souls are anxious to be saved because of the problems in the country. Bombs go off all around us. Craig was saying just a couple of weeks ago, there was a bus bomb just 2 blocks from our house. The big dam in Cinco de Noviembre was bombed out and destroyed 2 weeks ago, and that cut us down in electricity. We only have electricity 10 hours a day in the capital. In the country, they cut them completely off, but in the capital, with so many factories and so on, they have to keep it up. But they give us 10 hours a day, 14 hours a day, we don't have any electricity. But we continue on, the bombs all around us, but the Lord is all around us too. That's the important part. He keeps us in the hollow of his hand, and we're thankful to the Lord for what he's done, and we praise his name. Not of us. Not of us. No glory to us. But glory to the Lamb. Glory to the Lord Jesus. He's the one who has done the work. And we pray to him and we ask your prayers that we may continue to see, even in these last days, it could be that the door may close to El Salvador. Door closed to Nicaragua. Country is lower, close to Nicaragua. A country of great need. The Lord is still working in El Salvador, Guatemala, Costa Rica. Oh, by the way, when we were going down to El Salvador, we got our papers to go, and Sister Doug called up Doug in Vancouver. I said, Doug, I said, my visa comes through, and it expires in 30 days. I've got to be in El Salvador. I said, how about yours? Or he says, mine hasn't come through. He says, you better go, because we'll be down there in a couple of weeks. Well, I've waited 19 years for him, and he hasn't come. But you know, I'm thankful that I didn't know that he wasn't. I really believe that if I knew that he wasn't going to be down there in a couple of weeks, I don't think I would have. I don't think I would have got cold feet to go down alone. I didn't want to go down alone. We felt that he should go, but the Lord didn't allow us to know that he wasn't going to come to join us. But my father came up from Venezuela when the going was rough at the beginning, and he gave us a real good helping hand with getting some of the brethren settled that came over from Honduras, and they were refugees, and they were in the war, they were forced over back into El Salvador, and the Lord had saved them in Honduras, and they were a sheep without a shepherd, and they were going all over looking for someplace, and they try this Pentecostal group and that Pentecostal group, and they weren't happy. One brother, he says, I got up, he says, and all of a sudden there was a woman got up. The priest, he says, I just walked out the door, he says, and I decided I'm not going to go up any other place. He says, there's no other place. You know, why are there some people that are not satisfied and leave the assembly? I don't know. I really enjoyed Brother Maxwell's message on the assembly. There's no place that I like, that I enjoy. Maybe they're weak, maybe they're simple, and maybe they do a few, and make a few wrong decisions, but I still don't believe there's any place on earth as he is God's assembly. I love him, and I love to be amongst his people, and in El Salvador is no different. And these people were going from one place to another. And one time, one brother, he said, well, if there's no assembly here, I'll just start working myself. And I'll start an assembly with the Lord's help. And he was out giving out tracts all over the place. And we decided to go to this place. We didn't know he lived there. We decided to go this day to visit this place to see if we could have some meetings. And I went to the first man I met. I said, I'd like to give you a gospel tract. Oh, I don't want that. Very seldom you'll see a Salvadorian refuse a tract. In fact, I think in the 19 years that I've been there, I can count in one hand how many people have refused a tract, and I've given out thousands of tracts. And this, one company was sending me 5,000 tracts, and I said, is there any chance of getting any more? And so they sent me, and Lord said, well, somebody's sending a gift, and so we're sending you 20,000 this year. So, and the 20,000 went in about 2 months. We were all through with giving them out. But this man, he says, no, I don't want that. And I says, listen, I says, I'm giving it to you. It's the Word of God. No, I don't want that. He says, we already got somebody here that's a Christian. He says, and he says, if he were to give it to me, he says, I'd take it. But he says, I don't want to take it from anybody else. So I was kind of curious. I says, who is this? And he says, Don Moncho Escobar. Oh, Don Moncho Escobar, I says. I knew him because I'd met him up in an assembly, or up in a place in Aguas Escondida. And we had met, and I didn't know he'd come down there to live. And he says, Moncho Escobar. Oh, I says, I know Moncho Escobar. I says, he's a very good friend of mine. He says, you know Moncho Escobar? He says, well, I'll take that track. And he reached out and took that track. He says, if there's anybody that's a Christian, he says, Moncho Escobar is a Christian. I thought that was a real good testimony. If anybody's a Christian, Don Moncho is a Christian, and he was willing to accept that track. Oh, this, and it gave us a joy, and little by little, we started to gather these people together into one place. And I remember well the first place time in San Salvador we sat down to remember the Lord. I'll tell you, brethren, it was sweet, and it's still sweet. We enjoy every time we meet together to remember the Lord, but that one Sunday I do remember it. It was so precious. I don't think there was a dry eye in the whole meeting. There was that tenderness. It was that thought towards the Lord and love. Oh, they didn't have any real excellent language, you know. But just in their own simple language, they were telling the Lord they loved him. That drew our hearts to them. And ever since that day, the Lord continued to open up other doors. We're sorry to say that there's more doors down there than we know what to do with. We'd like to be able to do more. And there's no end of opportunities. But we just can do so much, you know. We only have two hands and only 24 hours in a day. And we don't want to try more work than we can handle. But I do want you to pray that the Lord, Alaska needs workers. El Salvador needs workers. The state needs workers. Let's pray that the Lord of the Vineyard will send forth laborers.